idea, that means that if you were to go so fast, 186,000 miles per second, that you were to circle the Earth 7.5 times every second, you're going that fast, it would take you 100,000 years to get across our galaxy. That's where we are. We're a dot in that, but that is the galaxy that we're in. Now, the furthest thing that we can see with our naked eye is the Andromeda galaxy. This, it looks like a star to us, but it's actually a whole galaxy twice the size of our own. And it's 2.5 million light years away from us. That's the furthest thing that we can see. Now, here's what's cool. If you were to put the Milky Way galaxy, let's say Earth, on the goal line of a football field, you take the whole universe and put it into the size of a football field, and you put the Milky Way on the goal line, you know where the Andromeda galaxy would be? 3 inches away. That is how massive the universe is. And God made it all for His pleasure, to dance and pulse with light. It's pretty awesome. If you think you're big, you're wrong. He is. Now, the other thing we've talked about is that we're fallen. Now, just to get sort of a perspective on this, we sometimes say the world is fallen. I just want to clarify something. The universe, the stars and the galaxies, and they spin and they shoot all these different colors of light out, they do exactly what God made them to do. The trees in the fall, the leaves turn color, beautiful colors, and they fall to the ground. In the spring, they'll come back again. They do exactly what their creator designed them to do. The animals, the insects, everything in creation does what the creator designed them to do, except for us. We're the ones. You and me are the ones that are fallen. See, our creator made us to subdue the earth, to fill the earth, to bring life to the earth. And we choose to turn our back on His design and His command and pursue our own pleasure. And God, in His great mercy, chooses to restore us rather than destroy us. That's the meaning of grace. The fact that when, based on our status within all the universe, we being the one thing that ought to, the one creature that ought to do its job, because God made us as sub-regents, people who would rule under Him and give life, and we rebel, we have no right. We should expect destruction, but yet God restores us. And that means He gives us the opportunity to live the life we were made to live. That's really what this section here is about. That's what chapter 6 and 7 is really about more than anything else. That in the gospel, God gives us the freedom to live out our design. That finally we can be what we were made to be. That's what we're going to be talking about. Now, he asks a few questions and sort of has this big rhetorical strategy as he goes through here. But what we're going to do is hit on a few key points that Paul keeps coming back to and try to understand those. And then we can hopefully live according to it. Remember, that's the point of Romans. I know I'm going to keep saying it, and I'm going to keep saying it. The point of Romans is that we might know the truth and then live our lives according to it. Because really, truly, if we're not going to adjust our lives according to the truth, then the truth has no value. If you have arrived, you don't need to change anything, okay? You really don't need to be different than you are right now. Nothing I say is going to have much value for you. If, however, there are things in your life that you think, I'd like to grow, I'd like to be different, I see certain places where I can change, then please stay with me, because that's the kind of people God needs us to be so that we can then adjust our lives according to the truth. And the whole point this week is how to live, how we were made to live. So this isn't just about intellectual knowledge. This is about heart and life change. Now, Paul, when he starts out here, he's picking up on a thread from the previous week. From last week, we talked about from the last chapter for Paul. He's picking up on this idea. He had just said, you know, where there is sin, there is grace. And so he asks this question to sort of get started. He says, so what then, verse 1 of chapter 6, what shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound? Now, that's a logical question. It makes sense. He's saying, if there's sin, there's grace, and grace is good. And it's something that, you know, a non-Christian, an outsider might levels a charge against Christianity. Oh, this is just an excuse to sin. It's a crutch. You can do whatever you want, get away with it. So that could be that. It could be someone saying, well, you know, I can kind of do what I want because, well, I got grace. Doesn't really matter anyway, does it? So there is that tension. And of course, Paul's answer right away is, by no means. No. You should not sin so that grace may abound. But instead of giving you the rules, instead of saying this is what you need to do, he starts, it's very, very important that we grasp this, because Paul's primary thing is not saying this is what you should do. He says this is who you are. That's like if I said, oh, I'm going to jump off a building and fly, your answer to me would be, you're not a bird. That's what Paul does. He says, no, you can't do that because that's not who you are. And he answers, you are dead to sin and raised to life. Now, according to everything Paul's already told us, sin and death are the master of humanity. If you're taking notes, write this down because I don't know where I heard it, but it's so true. Sin never asks for an inch. Sin doesn't want just a little bit. Think of all the addictions and the heartaches that could have been salvaged if it weren't for sin. You think, oh, I just want a little taste, just a little bit. I'm not going to overindulge. I just want a little bit of it. Go to any AA meeting and find out how that turns out. You think, I just want to gossip. I need to tell somebody this one thing. And that becomes bitter fighting with people that used to be close friends. You think, oh, I just want to have this flirty conversation with this coworker. Just a little. That becomes broken homes, alimony, and visitation. Because sin never asks for an inch. It wants to take everything and destroy us. I'm reminded of a story I heard about an eagle that saw us flying around, sees this ice floe floating down the Niagara River, and there's this deer carcass on it. So it's like, well, I got plenty of time, and it lands, and it starts, you know, digging away at this carcass, eating, and ravenously, and it hears the fall getting closer and knows it's about time. And just as the ice floe gets ready to go over the side, the eagle gets ready to take off, and his feet have frozen to the ice floe. And he goes over the fall and he dies. That's what sin does to us. It will destroy us. And it demands to. Look at chapter 7, 5. For while we were living in the flesh, our sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit for death. By members there, he means body parts. Our actual bodies used to create fruit for death. This is the natural human condition. We talked about this before. Since Adam, that is the way we are born. 6:16 says, do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient slaves, you are slaves to the one you obey, either of sin, which leads to death, or obedience, which leads to righteousness. Now imagine, if you will, two kingdoms. Let's give you an idea of what I'm talking about. One is a kingdom of sin and death. Because of Adam, when you and I are born, we're born into that kingdom. I'm not trying to be metaphorical. Like, imagine two medieval kingdoms. You know, I'm not trying to draw some spiritual metaphor. Just imagine that, two different kingdoms. We are born into one kingdom, all of us, sin and death. We are loyal subjects of that kingdom. We do what the king requests. We work hard. We do our labor in the kingdom. And and we pay taxes, and the fruit of our labor in that kingdom spurs the economy. All kingdoms have economies, right? Spurs the economy of sin and death. That's where we're born. That's where we're at. Now, you think, it's just a little harmless thing. We're not hurting anybody when we're greedy, right? I mean, if I just amass wealth for myself, I'm not trying to go kill any, I'm not hurting anyone. I heard a story this week. I talked to somebody who, in a former job, had an employer, owner of the business, who had a, he said he had a $250,000 Mercedes-Benz, and they were using substandard equipment and materials and supplies, the workers were, and they would ask, can we, you know, get some better this or that? And he said, we don't have the money. You're just going to have to make do with what you've got. So instead of giving good products to the world, he's given products that are going to break, used materials that are not good. Also, he can have a nicer car. No, he is harming the world because he's not doing the kind of good he could. He's hurting his employees and his clients. You think, you look at porn, you're not hurting anybody, right? Well, you're altering your own perception of what that relationship is supposed to be. You're affecting your relationship with everybody, sexual and otherwise. And statistics show that that creates greater supply and greater demand for trafficking victims. It does hurt people. This is the economy of death. This is the way it works. And our work, our labors within that kingdom create that, to cause that to grow. We stimulate the economy by our actions. When you want something that belongs to somebody else, when you lie, when you steal, when you do drugs, we spur that economy on. We create growth. We harm our relationships with our family, with ourselves, with our God, with our community. We bring death. Because that's the kingdom, that's the economy, and it causes it to grow. That's where we're born. But there is another kingdom. You see, kingdom that Paul calls life and righteousness. See, Paul's whole argument here is that because of something he calls union with Christ, he says, verse 5, we've been united with him in a death like his, we shall certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. See, Jesus died to the kingdom of sin and death. And he rose and he became the firstborn ruler within the kingdom of life. And if we die with Jesus, if we come and we die with him, we die to that kingdom too, and we are raised to life in a new kingdom. And one thing you can be sure of, The two are at war, but the war is kind of silly because Jesus has already defeated the superpowers of the kingdom of death. So we're pretty safe taking up residence in the new kingdom. But now, as citizens of this kingdom of life, Paul says we're free. We're free. That's something I want to think about for a minute. A few verses, 6, 12, 14. Let not sin, therefore, reign in your mortal body to make you obey its passions. Do not present your members to sin as instruments for unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and your members to God as instruments for righteousness. For sin will have no dominion over you, since you are not under law, but under grace. 6:18-19. Thanks be to God that you, who were once slaves of sin, had become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed, and having been set free from sin, have become slaves of righteousness. These things, do you hear this? He's talking about this is who you are. 7:5-6. For while you were living in the flesh, our sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit for death. To bear fruit. To work and labor and bring about more death. But now we are released from the law, having died to that which held us captive, so that we can serve in a new way of the Spirit and not in the old way. See, here's the whole point. As citizens of this new kingdom of life, we are free from sin and death. We're free from it, but we're free to contribute to the economy of the kingdom of life. We are free to now live and contribute a better economy, to build something better. We're free from greed, so we can drive a $60,000 car and buy better products and materials and contribute quality products to the world. We're free to stop running around looking to fulfill all of our little selfish desires and petty idols. We're free from all those things so that we can serve and love and bring life to the world. This is what Paul means when he means to be slave to righteousness. He means we can now finally contribute to do what we're supposed to do. The whole go and fill and subdue the earth thing that we were told way back in the beginning in Genesis, that whole thing means to bring culture and art and agriculture and education and economic systems. It means to fill the earth, subdue it, bring life to the world. Now we're free to do that. It doesn't mean, slaves to righteousness does not mean be good. It does. I need to say that again because we very easily, we've been led to believe that to be slaves of righteousness means be good. We've been led to believe that our salvation, that Jesus came and died so that we would go to church, sing songs, you know, eventually go to heaven one day and be just good people. That's what we believe. That's why Jesus died. Not at all. That's not what it is. He died to set us free, to restore us, to give us back our created purpose, to give life to the world. That's what our salvation is about. That's what God is doing. We can be free to be like the trees that turn color and fall. We can be like the galaxies that dance and spin for their maker. We can be what we were made to be. That's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus saves us. You think, who is around you? Who do you need to bring life to? Who do you feel called to? Maybe you'll go to the trunk or treat. Maybe you'll meet somebody who needs a friend. Maybe, and don't make it just, you know, it's sort of a checkbox. I'll go to trunk or treat. Okay, I'll pass this camp, go home. It's all over now. Get somebody's phone number. Get a number from somebody you don't know that's from another area of town that maybe you never would run across and ask them to lunch. Maybe you're thinking, you know, I really need to stay home and get to know the people in my neighborhood. That's terrific. I'm the last person on earth that's going to try to shut that down. If you want to do that, stay home, flip your lights on, dress crazy if you want. And when the neighbor kids come up, ask them how they're doing and invite them and their parents to dinner next week. Because our job, our calling, our purpose is now to give life to the world, wherever and however that is. Maybe that's fixing a broken elbow. Maybe, though, on Halloween, trunk or treat night, maybe you'll stay home, turn off all the lights, pull the blinds, and indulge in American Horror Story. It's hard. It's tempting. I understand. Because we're lazy. It's a struggle. It is hard to serve and love people well. Now, there's debates a lot about what Paul says next. It starts in 7:15. It says, "For I do not understand my own actions. I don't know. I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now, if I do what I do not want, I agree with the law that it is good, for now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh, for I have the desire to do what is right and not the ability to carry it out." Goes on, 21, "So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inner being, but I see in my members another law, waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" Now, I've read a lot of the arguments, and there are people say he's talking about an unconverted person and a converted person and a Jew and a Gentile, and they're trying to reason out who he's talking about. I don't think it matters. Because I think here's the point. We have all felt that way. And we will all likely feel that way again. At least I hope. I think there are times in life when we know we want to live as loyal subjects of the kingdom of life. And we're either being pulled because our identity is still over here in the kingdom of sin, death, or because we remember how easy it was sometimes to just shoot up, click on, take another shot. And sometimes we just want to run back there. I get that. And I think whichever point you are, we feel like this. We feel wretched because we hate ourselves because of the sin in us. Now, I hope right now all of us in here are longing to live as loyal subjects of this kingdom of life, to give ourselves away for the sake of others, to stop indulging ourselves and to live to contribute to this new economy that we're called to, that we're made for. The thing is, sometimes we want, I want to run my own life. Well, you never will. None of us will. We will serve. We will submit to the ruler of death or the ruler of life. The only question is, which of those two do you really want to live for? Because you're not going to live for yourself anyway. You can try, but you're over here. Or you can come and live as a loyal subject of the kingdom of life and bring good and bring beauty and bring hope to a broken world. We were made for that purpose. And if we live over there and do that, we will be living out our creation design. And there's nothing more fulfilling than being used for what you were made to do. And so, because of that longing, there is in each of us times where we go, wretched man, woman that I am, who will save me? And the answer is right here in verse 25. Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. That's the only hope we have of living a life of purpose, contributing to the economy of life. The only hope we have is to fall on our knees and confess our failure, our weakness, and our need, and grab a hold of Jesus. Whether we're over here or over there is irrelevant. We need Jesus and His amazing grace to change us and move us deeper and deeper into being loyal subjects in the economy of life. I pray you'll join me in living there. Let's pray. Jesus, make us loyal subjects in your kingdom of life. Pray you would save us from ourselves and our sin, that you would challenge us to be different. Make us discontent with even a hint of life in the kingdom of death. Draw us more and more to yourself and being passionate about the things that you are doing in the world. It's in your name. Amen.